to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires podcast. Over the past couple months, we've been interviewing members of the MLS and Austin supporters group. We've heard a lot of arguments in favor of moving the crew to Texas, but until now, we haven't heard from the other side. This is why I'm overjoyed to have Tim Myers on the show today. Tim has written two reports that showcase the campaign of disinformation that both the MLS and Anthony Precourt are involved in. Regardless of how you feel, I believe that both of Tim's reports should be required reading for all American soccer fans. All right, Tim. There's a quote in your last report. It's from Don Garber, and it reads, "What do you do in a market that simply is the lowest in every measure? In attendance, in revenue, in ticket pricing, in sponsorship, and local television ratings? If the soccer Don had said this to your face, what would your response have been?"
Honestly, I probably would have laughed. And this is one of the things that, you know, unfortunately about the situation that, you know, as the commissioner and the steward, if you will, of top flight soccer, what's supposed to be top flight soccer in this country, Garber has really gone out of his way to disparage our city rather than be non-committal to either side, rather than trying to remain neutral or, as you might suspect, trying to find an amicable solution to keeping the crew in Columbus. He seems to have been very eager to support Precourt and what he was considering doing. You know, one of the interesting things throughout my research I found is in the couple of cases where we actually have some data available, you know, when Garber makes those claims, he's not at all being accurate. When he says that we're last in every metric and so forth, it's one of these things where he's trying to find some words. Because the big obvious things and the big obvious problems that you would think they would try to use to justify what they're considering, they're simply not there and they're not true. So as a result, they really try hard to find ways to spin the story and spin the narrative to essentially be, you know, a sports business version of victim blaming, when in fact, what they're really trying to do is just spin a misleading narrative to deflect their own culpability and what they've created with this mess.
Yeah, I think that attendance seems to be the one issue in Columbus that I hear most people latch onto for the reason behind potential relocation. In your report, Quiet Lies, you say that the numbers being reported by the MLS, specifically for the playoffs last season, don't actually reflect the actual attendance. I've read the report, but I think it might be nice if you could explain how you reached that conclusion.
Yeah, so that was really interesting. That kind of goes back to my point of the misleading narrative. So for our playoff match last year, our first round of match against NYC, you know, if you go to enough career games or enough, you know, games of any sports team, if you're a season ticket holder, you start to get a feel for when you look around while you're at a game to get a sense of just what you think the announced attendance is going to be. And it's certainly true of the case here in Columbus. And so everyone in attendance that night, when we looked around, you know, we had an idea of what we figured the attendance would be just from a past experience. And then after the match, the club and league announced an attendance that was about 2,000 fans less. So because no one believed it, you know, I started going down the path of trying to figure out, is there a way to try to determine just what the true attendance would be using their standard methodology of distributed tickets? And what we found in going through this process was that they were probably underreporting the count. And what made that situation worse was, you know, as many people have heard reported, and you know, those of us there that night experienced, for that playoff match, they changed the gate policy and the security policy upon entering the stadium. So to make a very long, complicated story short, they essentially delayed entrance into the stadium and held people out. So that way, when the match kicked off, it would appear as if there weren't as many fans there as were, it was in actuality, it was really in attendance. And in doing that, everyone, you know, when you have a line backed up a mile long, you know, as the match is getting ready to kick off and all the security policies have seemed to change, you start to get the sense of what's happening and the fact that they're trying to keep their fans locked out of the stadium for the start of the match to try to put forth a narrative that, hey, the Columbus, you know, and their fans, they aren't supportive for that big first shot of the telecast where they pan around the stadium. And that kind of goes back to my original comment, where if we're supposedly so bad as a market and an unsupportive market and so forth, why do you need to go to those lengths to try to lie, to try to mislead, to go above and beyond to paint a narrative that you want to put out there? Because in theory, if we're that bad of an unsupportive of a market, it should just be obvious.
Is that the moment that you knew something fishy was going on, or were you doing this work beforehand, or was it as soon as they announced the potential move?
So some of the work that I was putting into these reports had started beforehand. As soon as they announced the move, the immediate comments they were making about why they were considering this, in terms of, you know, the corporate community in Columbus not being supportive, or the fans not being supportive and being behind the team, those types of comments, they didn't reflect what I was seeing here as a fan. So at that point, for the very initial comments in the first report, I just decided that I was going to try to take what they were saying and what they were alleging, and I would try to use publicly available information to try to, you know, kind of pose their statements as a hypothesis, and then try to figure out as best I could from publicly available information, you know, does the data suggest that they're either, you know, being truthful about this, or does it refute what they're saying? And by and large, you know, especially for those initial subjective comments, right, about, about the corporate community and the fan base, you know, I didn't have to dig very much to find that, hey, wait a second, this, what they're saying is not really reflective of reality. And then once I started going through that research, then some more data came to light, which led me down the path of looking into some other topics that I think were a little bit more severe in terms of the false narrative. Mm-hmm. Which kind of culminated in the second report.
And those, like, the more severe issues that you uncovered, the attendance, the ticket pricing, what are some of the other ones?
Yeah, so for me, one of the things that really stood out was the average ticket price, and not only the number that they reported, but the way they went about reporting it. So one of the frustrating things when they first made the announcement was we had the mysterious business metrics, which they wouldn't clarify what exactly they were. They were just, you know, as to what you alluded to earlier, they just said, you know, their business metrics, their last and everything, yada, yada. Well, at one point, a few weeks after the announcement, MLS had shared some information privately with one of the Sports Illustrated reporters who turned around, tweeted it, and then subsequently deleted it. And luckily, just in this age of social media we live in, someone grabbed a screenshot of it, which thank God they did, because now we had, you know, this information publicly available for us to review. And here again, they, you know, when you look at the information that was shared in that tweet, you know, they had us, you know, simply ranked without context on several of the metrics, attendance being one of them. But the only metric they actually included a number on was this average ticket price. So I wanted to take a look at that. The number that they reported, which just for the record is $20.02. If you're a Columbus Crew fan in the season ago, you know that's absurd.
What would you have assumed the average ticket price for a Crew game is? I've never been to a Crew game. I live in Austin, but I'm curious.
I would have expected that average price to probably be in the 30s.
Okay.
And again, that's just my personal guess without having the actual data, of course, from the club to be able to calculate it exactly.
Yeah, it's a huge difference.
But as a point of reference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very big difference. I mean, as a point of reference, right? Season tickets, you know, on a per match basis are usually priced cheaper than single game match or single match tickets, just logically, because you're buying the entire season's worth. The cheapest season ticket was only a dollar less than what they reported with this average ticket. So as soon as I did the very quick math and realized that, I knew something was really fishy with this number, and that's what made me try to dig into that a little bit further. And so by pulling in as much publicly available information as I could, leveraging the club's past comments over the years about season ticket levels, looking at, you know, past pricing for, you know, single game promotions and whatnot, I was able to put forth a series of calculations which didn't try to calculate the actual number, because like I just said a minute ago, I mean, you can't calculate that specifically without the raw data. But what I was able to do was to prove that that number is not mathematically possible as a ticket average price. Where I started making assumptions like all season ticket renewals or all season ticket sales were at the lowest renewal prices. And all sorts of complimentary tickets were included in the calculation at a $0 price point. And all sorts of tickets were included at the lowest possible single match discounts for the single match sales. So on and so on. So, I mean, I had probably 10 or 12 different assumptions that I kept layering one on top of another, just making the overall calculation more ridiculously conservative. And I still couldn't reach that number. In other words, I still couldn't back into that number. And then when I tried calculating a different way, where I started looking to say, okay, well, let's look at season tickets. Let's look at a per match basis. You know, is it a price point reflective of just the average pricing tiers of our tickets? And that wasn't even close per what I just said a second ago, where the lowest or cheapest season ticket was only a buck less than what they reported. So it became really clear that they're absolutely fabricating this number. And to what I said in starting this explanation, the way they went about communicating is even more troubling than the number itself. Because rather than make a big announcement and say, well, here are the metrics by which we're judging the Columbus Crew's financial performance, and here are their actual stats, and here's where those stats rank relative to other clubs. Rather than being transparent with all that information, they're putting out a number that's mathematically impossible. And on the sly, quietly, they're trying to feed it to members of the soccer media to support their narrative, which, of course, begs the question that if they're putting out a number that's not mathematically possible and so blatantly wrong in such a manner, how can they be taken with credibility when they start talking about these other metrics, whatever they may be?
Yeah, reading your report, that's the frustrating thing, is that there is no raw data. I'm just begging for somebody to independently verify any of this, because it seems like no matter what you do, you can move people through the proofs, and they're still going to say, well, you know, at this point, it's he said, she said. You know, people are going to look at, I mean, it shouldn't be he said, she said. What you're doing is purely logical, makes total sense. But do you have any hope of somebody sort of like, I don't know, a Save the Crew deep throat moment where somebody reaches out to you and tries?
Yeah. Having a WikiLeaks moment would be fantastic right now. And I agree with you 100% there. We would welcome the true data to somehow be made publicly available all of a sudden. But I mean, you're right. I mean, it's the other thing about this thing, it's kind of what I mentioned earlier about trying to pick out warts, for example. If this situation is so obvious, why isn't the league, why isn't pre-court, why aren't they just coming out and saying, in the single business entity MLS model, you know, the Crew are the least profitable club, they're the biggest money losers, they do more damage to the league's bottom line than anybody else, therefore that's why we're moving. But they don't say that. And that specific point is kind of like what led my research efforts towards, at the end of the second report, to looking at the Forbes data. For the last several years, Forbes has come out with their franchise valuations, which includes revenue and net operating numbers. And when you look at those numbers, if you want to try to pick out a single number that reflects a community support for a club, it's top line revenue, because that's going to include tickets and merchandise and TV and all in broadcast and all these others and all the various sources that are reflective of a community support for its team. And when you look at those Forbes numbers, you know, we're 12th, and we're ahead of some much larger markets in those rankings in terms of the revenue this team is able to generate here in Columbus.
So yeah. Do you mind if I just list off some of those markets real quick? Because I think it is kind of fascinating. Yeah, so it's the Houston Dynamo, Chicago Fire, DC United, Montreal Impact, Philadelphia Union, Real Salt Lake, Vancouver Whitecaps, and Colorado Rapids.
Right. And when I looked at the Forbes number, that wasn't a complete surprise to me, because I wrote about this in my second report. But prior to that, in the first report, some of my analysis had gone down the path of looking at things on a per capita basis in terms of the number of sponsoring companies the Crew has relative to the business population, the number of, you know, what our average attendance the year before the hijink started, you know, as a per capita of the population here in Columbus, which, again, we came out very strong in those measures when I was calculating. So the fact that when I eventually made my way to the Forbes data and saw that revenue number, I mean, I honestly, I wasn't surprised. And this also kind of begs the question. So if that's the case, why is it that they're going through a list and they're trying to cherry pick these numbers where they think they can pass a false narrative on? If this was such a no-brainer, with all due respect to their prior fans, if we're Chivas USA, why not just make those statements? Why not just talk about, hey, Columbus can't generate any revenue. Hey, Columbus is the least profitable team in the league. Why not just simply come out and say those things? And the most obvious explanation why they're not saying those things is because they're not true.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who even have problems with the numbers that MLS gives to Forbes. Every year, the Soccernomics guys come out with reports saying how even those numbers can't be true. So, it's tough to know what's what in this situation because, like I said before, like you said before, everything is coming from the mouth of the MLS. It's so hard to judge what is going on. But is there, when I read these reports, what's most shocking to me is sort of the lack of national play that your reports are getting. What has the response been to these outside of Columbus? Do you have a lot of people reaching out to talk to you?
Some. So, I was on when I, after the release of the first report, I was on the Jason Davis show on Sirius XM. Had a couple of other newspaper writers around reach out to me. One in San Antonio, coincidentally.
Makes sense.
So there's been a little bit of interest outside of Columbus, I'll say. And certainly I think some of the things that I called out in the reports, they certainly get bannered about, and there's been a few references to different web articles here and there with various soccer sites. But unfortunately, part of the problem that we're facing right now is that outside of the Columbus media circles, outside of some of the MLS and soccer circles here in the States, we are getting, we do need some greater attention on this, because right now MLS, with there doesn't seem to be, I guess, a better way to say it, there doesn't seem to be a strong national media voice pushing back on the MLS narrative. Because even when we've had instances where, and I won't name names, but even when we've had instances where prominent soccer media members in this country have, had the one-on-one interviews with Don Garber, yes, they bring it up because it's the elephant in the room, and they can't help it. They must. But usually it's the case of they bring it up, Garber spews forth his narrative, and then they move on to the next subject, which is unfortunate. And that's one of the reasons why I think with people that are trying to help out with the Save the Crew movement, whether it's, the two reports I've created, there are a number of other people that are doing similar types of research initiatives that are, more, just as significant, not more significant than what I've put out there. That's the reason why we're doing this. We're trying to fight back against the narrative. And unlike MLS, we're trying to be as transparent as we can. I mean, if you've noticed in these reports I've put out, I'm trying to put out my work, my sources. I've got several pages of endnotes and references where I'm pulling this information. I'm trying to do this with complete transparency so people don't mistake this for being a false narrative from the other direction.
Listening to you talk, so I'm originally from Milwaukee, which is another kind of like unsexy Midwestern city. Just listening to you now, I wonder if it's Columbus is kind of going up against the brand of Austin. It just feels like there's something inherently Midwestern about this, right? Like we're just getting ignored. I don't know why I'm saying we're. I'm in Austin, but
Plenty
I do. I do with pride. But it seems to be like Columbus is the 31st largest metropolitan area. Austin is the 32nd. Columbus has a 10% growth rate. Austin's is about 19. Columbus is an up and coming tech hub. The cities are more similar than they are dissimilar. But that's not what's being sold right now. But does this make sense to you? I don't know what I'm asking right now. I think I just got mad from my Midwestern roots, but
yeah, I mean, it's, I think the word I think you might be searching for is perplexing. Because if this were a case where, let's say, I'm just, let's say Los Angeles didn't have a team, and the issue at hand was they were going to move the crew to Los Angeles, right? Okay, moving to a city that large, I mean, again, there are obvious economic reasons why you could understand why that would be posed as a potential benefit for the club. But everything you just rattled off, we've been asking ourselves the same question for for a while now about that, and especially early on when it was announced at Austin, of all places. And even that, you know, when you stop and think about it, I mean, there are so many similarities. That one thing that we kind of uncovered in our research is, in terms of the rationale for that, really boils down to Dave Greeley. So Dave Greeley, you know, for your listeners who may not be familiar, he is the right-hand man in within Precourt Sports Ventures for Anthony Precourt, our owner. So he's the one that seems to be, you know, mostly running the AstroTurf campaign in Austin right now. His professional experience was that prior to joining, and a couple jobs prior before joining Anthony Precourt, he was president of Chicago Fire for a couple years. And as we researched his background, because one of the things we realized in our research efforts is we, unfortunately, sadly to admit, we don't have very good executive leadership on the club, which that's, you know, another subject. But in researching that, what we found in some of Greeley's background in his time in Chicago was he seemed very preoccupied with brand awareness, meaning when he was in charge of the Fire, he struggled getting the Fire relevant relative to the other major league sports options that Chicago has. I mean, he's on the record several times saying we need to be seen as the sixth major league team in Chicago. He then later on, if you go and you read his LinkedIn profile, which is a fantastic read, he references as having written the quote investment thesis for Precourt's purchase of the Crew. So it seems logical that for a guy who struggled, you know, running an MLS club, competing with other major league sports, that when he gets the opportunity to help someone else buy an MLS club and to write, you know, essentially come up for the end game business plan, seems pretty logical that he would try to make sure that they had an escape clause written into the one city that's the largest metropolitan area without a major league sports team in the country, which of course is Austin. And then when you read the thinking here is that he was probably the main driver of that. And when you look at the very first press release when they made the announcement after the story broke, one of the first things they mentioned about Austin, not its demographics, not its soccer history, not anything like that. One of the very first things they mentioned in that press release is biggest metropolitan area without a major league team. And when you tie Greeley's professional experience to that statement, it makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, saying that, you know, he's a man who really can't handle competition. Saying that you're Chicago's sixth major league team, even the wording of that seems to me to admit some kind of defeat, right? Like there's something strange in that. So for him, Austin is just kind of like this thing that makes him salivate, perhaps. But I don't want to, you know, create a psychological profile of Greeley. But I'm going to just do one quick last question. Whenever I bring on the MLS in Austin people, not the MLS 2 ATX, but the grassroots group here in Austin, I always say, okay, what would you say to the Save the Crew movement? What would you say to people in Columbus? And they all say the same thing. They say they're sorry that it's happening. Obviously, they have a tremendous amount of respect and sympathy for you guys. Is there anything that you would say to soccer fans in Austin right now?
You know, I think a lot of Crew fans may say, you know, they may say start your own club. Me personally, I really wouldn't have much to say to the Austin soccer community. And again, from my standpoint, I think most of the people here in Columbus, I mean, we don't have an axe to grind with the people in Austin, because we understand the way this went down. We understand we have our owners trying to shove our club onto their city. Probably the only thing I would say would be to not trust what these guys are saying, and do not trust them as far as you could throw them. You know, twice now with Austin media, ironically, you know, Precourt has been asked point blank, are there any other cities that are potential landing places and any other potential cities involved as an outcome in this? And he refuses to answer the question. So it's not a stretch to think that Austin may not be Precourt's, you know, end game here. And that the only reason he's interested in Austin is because that's where his current escape clause, you know, states him, or it allows him to be interested in right now. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the statements they've made here locally, when you look at the past track record I mean, you know, as an aside, you know, we can't help but follow the story and what's going on in Austin just because all this is so intertwined. Anytime we hear them talking about authentically Austin and ambition and all this kind of and all these kind of buzzwords, it makes us sick to our stomachs because this was the same narrative we were fed when he came here and took over the club. And given some of the things, you know, that we found, myself and others have found in our research, and the way this has gone down, I mean, the only thing I would say to the people in Austin would be, do not trust these guys as far as you get their own.
Amen. This is exactly what I've been talking to about with my friends down here, is that I love soccer. I'm obsessed with soccer. I spend far too much time reading, watching, thinking about it, but I don't want to be engaged in cognitive dissonance. Everything I see from Precourt leads me to believe that he's a bad owner. It's going to be hard for me to get behind a franchise that's led by not only him, but, you know, his two cohorts. But enough brooding and sadness. Well, Tim, thank you so much for coming on. Everybody, please go read his reports, specifically Quiet Lies is the second one. That's the one I like. The first one's called What's the Truth? Yes. Anything you want to add to the listeners?
No, just save the crew. Tell everyone you know.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.